Welcome to Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlene. Vegan Nation is an informational program about living the vegan lifestyle, featuring interviews with individuals and organizations who are practicing a healthy vegan lifestyle. This edition of Vegan Nation continues with the Voices of Women series, Return of the Sacred Feminine. My guests are Annie Hudson from New York City and Aria May, an animal communicator in Worcester, Massachusetts. Aria will be joining us here in the WCUW studios after the break. I'm very honored and happy that joining us now is Annie Hudson. Annie is a vegan activist who lives in New York City. She has a dog walking business called Hudson's Hounds. Annie is a former Texan 4-H'er. Thank you very much, Annie, for joining us on Vegan Nation.
Thank you, Marlene. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'd love to hear how a Texan farmer ended up in New York City.
That's an interesting story. Well, I do have a degree in dance and theater, so I think it just made the most sense for me to mosey my way on over to the big city to sort of create a lifestyle around that artwork. However, when I got here, I realized I wanted to work more with animals, so getting here sort of led me on my path to veganism, actually.
Yeah, I'd love to hear how that progression into veganism occurred.
You know, I started working with dogs. You know, working with dogs, I'd rescued my dog, Ava, back in Texas, and I started working, volunteering with homeless companion animals, dogs and cats, and that really opened my eyes to the suffering of others, of other species. And I started diving into, okay, well, if I'm so concerned about dogs and cats, what about these other animals? And I hadn't quite looked at it like that for a very long time, but I did as a child. And at the time, I was considered myself what we would call a pescatarian, someone who didn't consume flesh of land animals, but I did still consume sea animals. And I had actually no intentions of becoming vegan. But when I started looking more and more into the suffering of animals on what I thought was humane farming, such as cage-free and free-range, when I looked into the industry standards of these and I realized, actually, these aren't as lovely as I thought they were, and I looked into the fact that we actually don't need these products to not only sustain but to thrive, then I had no choice but to become a vegan. So I finally did sometime later, and it's the best decision I've ever made. I wish I would have done it a long time ago.
That's great to hear, Annie, and I know that you are quite the vegan cook. Can you give our listeners one simple tip?
Yes, I do love to cook. I always have, and I would say there's these amazing products out there now, you know, all of these vegan meats and cheeses, and they just came out with vegan eggs, and you can replace any non-vegan item, you can replace it with a vegan one now. So really, you're running out of excuses. But I would say, don't be afraid to experiment. It's really fun. It feels good. It made me feel lighter, not just in my body, but in my conscience as well. I would recommend, if you're looking for ideas, go to Instagram. So you can actually follow my personal Instagram. It's Annie M. Hudson. Annie M. as in Marie Hudson. And I post a lot of the things that I make.
Thank you, Annie. That's great to know about your vegan Instagram. We're just evolving as humanity into greater awareness. Annie, I'd really like to hear about your experience with poultry with 4-H in Texas.
So I think what you said is important. It's sort of just generation to generation. There's really no one to blame, but I think it's really time that we start questioning the motives and what we're doing to young children by having them participate in these organizations. And for those listening who know 4-H, I do realize that the animal agriculture is just one aspect of it. There are different things that you can get involved in with 4-H, and I think those are great. But this is just the animal agriculture part of it. So with poultry, that includes chickens, ducks, turkeys, pheasants, all sorts of fowl. And the sad thing about 4-H is that children get involved with 4-H and FFA because they love animals, because of their love for animals. So instead of taking that love and applying it to the animals to have them be viewed as individuals, as a moral community, we take that love for animals and we twist it and we say, well, this is the way it has to be. This is the way it's always been. This is why they're here. So you love them and you care for them the best you can, but then at the end you kill them. So at the end of my experience with 4-H for the last few years, I did what we call broiler chickens, which are birds used for meat. And they give you 25 birds, one day old, in a box, and you pick them up at the post office. They're shipped, and you have them in this tiny space. You know, once they start getting bigger and these animals get very big, I mean, we were pouring bacon grease on their food, like anything to do to fatten them up, and they weren't allowed to free range. They're not allowed to have perches anywhere to go up and nest because that's too much exercise, and they need to be nice and plump. So at the end of 5 weeks, we're about to have the livestock show, and my mother says, okay, you have to pick your best 5 out of the 25. And by the best, I mean, you know, the fattest and most healthiest looking. And you're going to auction off 5 of them, and then the other 20 we have to slaughter. And I remember just driving home from school and having this conversation and really being affected inside, because I'd spent all this time taking care of these animals and taking pride in it, right? I really loved interacting with them and taking and being a caretaker for them. And then they had to be killed at the end. It made no sense. And I had other friends who had lambs and heifers and steers and hogs, and the same thing. They take care of, you know, with those, the larger animals, they take care of one animal at a time. And then you go and you auction off your animal, and then that animal does not get to come home with you. And you've spent all this time caring for, bonding them, naming them, and then they're just gone. And I remember going to my best friend's house who had a lamb, and who was so sad that she, you know, when the lamb was gone. And so during my spring break, one day I had two friends come over, and they each brought their 20 birds. So I spent a day of my spring break slaughtering, taking the lives of 60 birds who didn't want it, who didn't ask for it. So that was a really traumatic day for me. And I think I was maybe 10 years old when that happened.
Annie, will you explain more about the egg industry?
With the egg industry, the chickens have to lay fertile eggs, and you have to hatch them. And half of those eggs end up being female chickens, and half will be male chickens. Those male chicks, since they don't produce eggs, they're not profitable, they will be killed at one day. And that's usually by throwing them into a grinder alive, or gassing them, or suffocating them. So people have this idea that if we're not eating flesh, it's actually helpful. But with the egg industry, there is actually a tremendous amount of death. And then the hens will go on to live a life of exploitation. And when they stop producing the amount of eggs that they want to make a profit, those chickens are considered spent usually, and they will always be killed in the end. I know that there's pushes for enriched cages, or there's these things that are marketed as cage-free or free-range, but I would really encourage people to go and research what that actually means. That's what I did, and that's how I became vegan, because we have this image in our mind of these lush fields, and they get to run around and just bathe and be happy, but that is not the case at all. There's this thing called forced molting, where they have them in the dark for up to 3 weeks at a time with no food or water. They're being starved so that they can go through the molting process faster, because they won't lay during that time. And then so they start to lay again faster, so of course they can make more of a profit of them. To me, that's just violent. And even if we're talking about backyard hens, where they have supposedly good lives, where did those hens come from? Did they support an industry that still kills male chicks? Are you supporting an industry who still has animals sent to slaughter? So are we breeding animals unnecessarily? And I would argue that hens actually, when they lay eggs, they are looking to become mothers. And so when they lay an egg, it's for themselves. It's not for you. It takes a tremendous amount of work to lay an egg. It extracts calcium from their body. And when we take these eggs away, we actually cause them to go into a bit of stress. And they will try to replenish those eggs until their nest is filled. So when we're constantly taking the eggs away, they're constantly trying to replenish their nest. And in my own experience, having free-range chickens that were actually running around, the hens would move around. They would lay eggs in certain places, and then we would take those eggs, and they'd say, okay, I guess this is in a safe place. So then they would move around where they would lay their eggs. Of course, unfortunately, we would always take them from them. But that's a sign that they're really wanting to keep those eggs. Even if they're unfertilized, they still have this instinct to keep them. So I would suggest that the eggs are actually, they're for the hens. They were never ours to begin with.
Thank you, Annie. You explain it so well. I think it is important to understand that when we really look at it, the entire animal agriculture industry really is a misogynistic institution. It's exploiting females for their reproductive secretions, whether it's the eggs of hens or the breast milk of dairy cows or the children themselves. And I know there's a lot of campaigns that spend a tremendous amount of time and money and energy on advocating in a political sense to stop veal crates, or to stop gestation crates for the sows, or to get the hens out of battery cages. And I see that, boy, that whole effort could be a lot more productive if we all advocated for veganism. What are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. As animal rights activists, we have to stop talking about these enriched cages, these, you know, bigger gestation crates or whatever the case is, and we have to start bringing the idea of veganism to the table. And you're right. Eggs and dairy are absolutely an exploitation on a female's reproductive system. There's just no other way to look at it. So I would argue that these animal groups are really insistent on widening the cages, so to speak, but we really have to focus on what it would look like to empty these cages. And so dairy supports the veal industry. It would not exist if it were not for the dairy industry. So I'm not really sure why we're talking about having larger veal crates. I mean, that just doesn't make sense to me. And if you're listening to this and the idea of veal is really upsetting to you, it only exists because a mother cow was forcibly impregnated and had her child taken away from her. You know, and cows, they have a 9-month gestation period, and they have a strong mother-baby bond, and we're destroying that by consuming a milk that we don't even need. It's not even healthy for us. So harming animals unnecessarily, none of us want to do that. And so I think it's really important to focus on the educational aspects of what's going on in the animal agriculture industry and look at lifting people up in a way that inspires them to really make change.
Yes, and thank you so much, Annie. You're a great vegan activist. And are there any other messages that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I personally like the literature for Abolition Vegan Society. You can go to abolitionistvegansociety.org, and they will actually send you literature with a very clear, non-speciesist vegan message. They'll send you the literature for free, and you can hand it out to people. And as long as you're in a public space, you can actually leaflet anywhere. So it's totally legal. You don't need a permit. You can do it on your own. Get a couple of friends together. I encourage people to have film screenings. You can choose Cowspiracy, Forks Over Knives. If you can get them to watch Earthlings, that's great. And then have some sort of dialogue afterwards. I think just the more that we're educating people, the better. And if you're not vegan, go vegan. It's the best thing you can do for the animals, for the planet, and for yourself. And, you know, there's no better time than right now to do all of those things. So if you have any questions, feel free to email me at info@hudsonshoundsnyc.com. You can also find me on Facebook, Annie Hudson, and I would be more than happy to answer any questions to help you on your journey through a vegan lifestyle.
Thank you, Annie. You are an inspiration.
Oh, thank you, Marlene. Thank you for everything that you're doing.
And I love the name of your business, Hudson's Hounds. That's clever.
Thanks. Hudson is my last name, but it's also very New York to have Hudson in the name of anything. So I like the way the two of them tied together.
And it's also an inspiration that you were following your dream.
I was. Didn't expect to end up this way. I thought I would be choreographing on Broadway by now, but I'm really happy with how my life has turned out. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Wonderful. Thanks again, Annie.
Thanks, Marlene.
It's time to take a quick break. And after the break, we'll be joined by animal communicator, Aria May.
Hi, this is Jeff Galindo, urging you to support Community Radio WCUW Worcester with a pledge of support to 508-753-2284 or online at wcuw.org.
This is Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Molly Narrow. And now joining us in the WCUW studios is Aria May. Aria has a service in trauma healing for animals. She is also an animal communicator. Aria lives in Worcester, Massachusetts. She is originally from Michigan. She graduated from the University of Michigan with a bachelor's in sociology and peace and social justice. Thank you, Aria, for coming into the WCUW studios today.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here and get to meet you. I see you as one of the gems that Worcester has to offer.
Thank you, Aria. I'd like to start with asking about your service of healing trauma.
I have been studying techniques for supporting people who would like to heal trauma related to things that happened in their childhood, but also ancestral trauma. So I've studied with the technique of shadow work, as well as family constellations. And as I was going through the process of learning about these and thinking of applying them in my own life and in other people's lives, it occurred to me that animals have ancestors and trauma as well. And what a wonderful gift to be able to offer for folks struggling with, you know, maybe things that their pets might be struggling with, and to really get at the root of healing all the trauma in the world for animals as well. I use a technique that is heart-based, and using my heart as an organ of perception, I can tune in to what is happening for an animal. It's a technique that I can teach others. I believe everyone has the capacity to, you know, using our hearts, be able to receive information from animals and in that way communicate back and forth. So it's very exciting because just as we, you know, use our eyes to see things and we hear with our ears, we can actually, if we remember that we have the capacity, we can tap into the very scientifically proven, incredible power of our hearts to have that sort of dialogue with animals in our lives and, in fact, all over the world. And this is a way that I think we can start to hopefully bring more awareness of the importance of veganism as well by having that empathetic sort of connection with animals everywhere.
You truly are a manifestation of the sacred feminine rising.
Thank you. I aspire certainly to embody that in my life. And for me, the idea of the actual practice of using my heart with my work is very much aligned with my relationship with the sacred feminine and really honoring what's been sort of forgotten in our modern day culture, being able to step into the deep wisdom that we all have, that for whatever reason, we're in a time and a place where those things just aren't honored as much, but to be able to connect in this way with this side of ourselves and say, yeah, I can talk to animals, of course. Why wouldn't I be able to? I am an animal. And so there's very real space that we can go into and have those relationships. And it's extraordinary and beautiful and it's really fun. I love it.
And I'd like to hear more about your slogan, "We are animals."
Sure. That phrase came to me during my training last year when this vision was really coming into a solid form of what this work should be that I'm offering now. It summarizes the belief that I have that is so important, I think, for society to embrace. I hope we can embrace it. That simply, we're not that different from other species. We are animals, just like cows and chickens and elephants, and that there's actually this way that by connecting with that part of ourselves, we can actually tap into a lot more compassion and empathy and sharing that heart space with other animals, especially, and feeling what they may be feeling, what they are feeling. You know, I'm excited to offer that as a service to teach others how to tap into that because it's just so profound to have that realization of your own animal nature in that way.
And I'd like to hear about your workshop that you held recently in Worcester, Mass. For the Animal Communication Workshop.
I was just completely honored and blown away by how quickly the participants were able to learn some of the intuitive perception techniques that I learn. And it's such a gift to be able to offer that and see the connections be made in someone's brain when they understand the power of their heart and all the support that comes behind you when you want to tap into this skill set. So I work a lot with archetypal support and ancestral support, and also bring in some of the tools for healing and processing, you know, shadow work and family constellations in the workshop. We did some small pieces for people's pets during the weekend, which was really great. Excited to see the outcomes of some of those healing sessions that the group helped support. The whole weekend was a lot of play. It was super fun.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And I'm also very thrilled that you are vegan.
I grew up vegetarian, and opening up to the fact that it was actually an injustice that I was consuming eggs and dairy and these things has opened up at the same time as the skill for animal communication has in my life. And it just became really clear that I couldn't be doing this work and having these opinions about other social justice causes if I wasn't really going all the way in this way.
Aria, will you please expound on that a little bit more about the female animals, especially in relation to egg and dairy, and that connection of veganism with the divine feminine and the sacred feminine rising?
Yeah, absolutely. It's so crystal clear. You know, I get a shiver when you even speak those words, because how many of us are doing activist sorts of actions for women's rights, signing petitions or protesting or whatever, trying to bring awareness to rape culture on campuses, even here in Worcester. There's so much that, you know, work that I've seen in regard to human women, right? And to not extend that same concern and desire for dignity for female animals, I think, is just a shortcoming and short-sightedness. So if you're advocating for women's rights, to take that next step and advocate for female animal rights as well.
It is humanity's actions towards animals that reflects back to us, becomes a mirror.
Yes, I agree.
Thank you, Aria.
Thank you.
Aria, we're coming to a close in the interview. Are there any additional messages that you would like to leave with our listeners?
Sure. As a closing message, I'll just say that there's so much support available to us from the animal realm. So another way that I work with people and animals is through connecting with animal guides and animal medicine, and better understanding, you know, what some of the purposes of our deep connections with animals are. What is the purpose of some of our fears of animals as well? So I'm available to explore those sorts of topics in workshops or one-on-one. You can learn more about that and other services that I offer on my website, which is ariamae.com. It's ariamae.com. And I have a blog and all my details are there. There's also a Facebook page called We Are Animals.
Thank you, Aria.
Thank you so much, Marlene.
We've been joined by Aria May, animal communicator, and vegan activist Annie Hudson. In celebration of the powerful work of Annie Hudson and Aria May, let's go out with a song by New York City's vegan singer-songwriter Joy Askew. Joy will be in Massachusetts next week during the Compassion Arts Festival being held at Earthlands Environmental Awareness Center in Petersham, Mass. Joy's concert on Tuesday night at 8:30 is a concert of songs about, for, and inspired by animals. And her songwriting workshop is being held on Wednesday from 3 to 5 p.m., a songwriting workshop focusing on thoughts on animals, nature, compassion, freedom, or injustice. Here is Poor Man's Greed by Joy Askew. I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in to Vegan Nation. You
these sad disgraces happen.
Join us next week at this time, where we'll bring you more news on living a vegan lifestyle. Hear this program again at wcuw.org/vegannation. Theme music provided by Will Tuttle. This is Marlene Narrow, wishing you a good day.